As a young man, Dr. Steve Georgiarkis was an elite athlete on his way to represent his country at the 1992 Olympics in Barcelona. Then, at just 22, he suffered a career-ending injury, and overnight, this bright future dissolved. But his love and passion for sport never went away. Over the last 20 years, Steve has published extensively about his research into the growing commercialization of sport, and is especially interested in how the professionalization of the industry impacts how we engage with sport at a grassroots level. Dr. Steve Georgiarkis is a senior lecturer at the University of Sydney. And with the 2016 Rio Olympics fast approaching, today on the podcast, we're going to be talking elite athletes versus couch potatoes. Are the Olympics worth all the money we spend on it? Does it encourage us to exercise more? This is open for discussion. I'm your host, Chris Neff. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, and a sad story, but a true story that many people don't really know about my former sporting career.
Yeah, do you mind sharing with us what happened?
Look, I played injured for about a year.
This was soccer or football?
Soccer. Mm-hmm. And just prior to the games there, we had a match against South Korea, and completely tore my groin muscle off the bone. And I was out of the games, which was a huge disappointment, but it galvanized my interest in sport. And in many ways, it was a blessing.
Because sport is one of the national pastimes of Australia. A lot of Australians build their identity around sport, so it plays a central role. Are Australians as obsessed about sport as they were 20 years ago?
Look, it's a core value of being Australian. And of course, the high point of Australian sport was at about the time of the 2000 Olympic Games. We had a number of individuals who were athletes, who became Australians of the Year. We were the world champions in a whole range of sports. And of course, in this high point of sport in the year 2000, we came fourth on the medal count. And it became this force that really united all the different sections of Australian society. There's been a decline now, and even though we may be obsessed with sport, the obsession is not as great as around the turn of the last century.
Does the increased attention to a sport necessarily mean that the country, that they do more athletic activities, that it sort of spurs on, you know, gets people up and moving? And does the whole country join in an Olympic year or when a country hosts the Olympics?
Look, great question, Chris. The answer is not a simple one. What we do know is that for a lot of Australians, for a lot of youth, the Olympics becomes just about spectatorship and watching our great athletes win medals. And of course, the commercialization of the sport, money that's been put into the sport, has resulted in these amazing performances at the Olympic Games. But on the flip side of that, it's become this commodified entity that the way to involve yourself in sport is not to actually go out and participate, but to actually watch it on TV and look at all of the products that are advertised and are part of the Olympic Games.
So if it's switched to a commoditized business model that doesn't necessarily lead to more participation, but definitely leads to more spectators in an industry of gambling and any of a number of things, why is the public investing in this?
More than 2,000 years ago, the Romans gave this ideology a term, and they called it give them bread and spectacles. And it's this idea that you can control the masses by giving them enough wealth and jobs, and then giving them spectacles, get them involved in things that really don't add to the meaning of life. So I believe it's a way of, keeping people happy and get them feeling nationalistic about and this idea that we're a superior nation because we earn gold medals at the Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important point, Steve, that this sort of commodification of the Olympics, that you end up with, you know, an increased business interest, a shift from participation to spectatorship, and, you know, gambling that goes on around the Olympics.
I grew up in a period where sport had held this educational value. You participated in sport to make friends, to open up the Australian way of life, going to a beach, swim, running around, hiking. And that's the reason why we all played sport. We're now in this age now where young kids, aspiring athletes, realise that sport is about making money. And there's this great battle between the two forces.
It seems that there are issues of class and ability and race and sex and gender identity that are much more complex than flipping on a TV and watching the Olympics or watching an AFL match. What would you say about the factor of money? I mean,
class is a big issue, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because unfortunately in 2016, participation in sport at the youth level is based on the particular class that you're in. In a lot of these elite independent schools, which receive an incredible amount of money from the government, these kids have compulsory sport, male and female. Unfortunately, in the government school system, there is no compulsory sport. People always talk about the Finnish model of education. You hear it all the time. What they don't tell you is that every hour in any particular school in Finland, the kids do 15 minutes of rigorous physical activity. It becomes this way of actually improving educational attainment. I think as a country, we've got to make a decision about the place of sport in our society and this correlation between sport and big business is wrong, to be quite frank with you.
Okay. So Steve, what are the benefits for people who do sport? I'm a lawn bowler. I play tennis, I swim, I was a competitive water skier. But really, if I was going to say my favorite, it would be lawn bowling. What do you think are some of the benefits of doing sport? And are there sports that are more popular in Australia than?
I consider myself one of Australia's leading lawn bowl coaches. So I've developed this technique of teaching anyone how to lawn bowls in 10 minutes. Mm. And it's this inclusive way. And of course, this is the way that all sport should be taught. So it's not really about what sports kids should be playing. They should be playing a cross range of sports. They should be doing target sports like lawn bowls. They should be doing invasion games like soccer and netball. They should be doing individual discipline sports like swimming and gymnastics. But the key here is to give the kids a wide range of experiences.
I'm fascinated by the way you categorize the different sports, like when you said soccer or football was an invasion game. Is that, like, do sports have different categories that they fall into that sort of teach us these skills?
Look, Chris, there are a number of benefits of playing sport. In this age of obesity, we think that we play sport for the reason of addressing health issues, but it's more than that. It's about academic achievement. A kid that's settled and fit and strong is going to study better. There are also all of the social learning that takes place. Another important reason here is this idea that you can learn certain values in playing sport, working towards a goal, strategy, all these other benefits. So it's purely not just about going into a gym and sitting on a cross trainer with your headphones on, listening to Britney Spears or Rihanna. You were laughing when I mentioned lawn bowls. There are so many different aspects of lawn bowls that make it such a great sport.
I take lawn bowls very seriously, for the record, Steve. And there's also the sort of interpersonal communication with people that you might not have necessarily met before. Like when you do different sports, different people do different sports. And so I know here at Sydney Uni, I was a member of the ping pong club. And I was the only American in the group. And there were a number of Chinese, Japanese, Korean, whatever, who took turns kicking my butt. And but it was a fantastic way to communicate with a group of people that I, when else was I gonna meet a group of 20 Koreans? Did you know the University of Sydney has over 20 students and alumni competing in Rio 2016? Keep up to date with their progress by following Sydney University on Facebook and Twitter. You know, we've talked about some of the shortfalls around grassroots participation, declines in the way youth are participating in sport, and yet we still see increasing amounts every year of federal or state dollars going to the Olympics and going to elite athlete programs for Commonwealth Games, for the Olympics. Is that money well spent?
It is money well spent from a perspective of keeping sport as one of the core values of Australian culture. And I think it's a good thing, this idea that we take pride in these young athletes who are our great models doing well at the Olympic Games. And as you probably know, the only way that you can do well at the Olympic Games is to have this specialised focus system where you target medals. And of course, this is where the majority of the funding goes. But on the flip side there, we have to understand that success at the Olympic Games has very little correlation with increased participation in sport. But we don't see any of that. We see sport as being this this institution which grooms our youth into being elite athletes. And if you're not in the, you know, top 1%, sport has a very negative meaning.
Well, and it can be, because if you're watching people on TV, I sort of do this based on my age. So when I watch Wimbledon or I watch the Olympics, I think, oh, I don't think I could do that. And so it almost has a negative trickle-down effect on repressing, like keeping me in the as a couch potato. Like, okay, fine, I'll open a bag of potato chips and watch the game. So
I'm getting a little hungry at the moment there. And look, the issue is a lot of Australian youth won't take up track and field sports because at a very young age they look at the elite athletes doing these amazing things at the Olympic Games, and kids realise straight away that I've got zero chance of actually doing that. So if I'm not going to go to the Olympics, I'm not going to take up any sport whatsoever. And it's a very, very problematic issue.
And you were saying that one venue that could be really important in doing that is schools, that the way that schools do it.
It's the only place. If it's ever going to happen, if we're going to have an Australian society of youth who are fit and enjoy physical activity, they can only learn this in the school setting.
You mentioned that, you know, one of the great advantages of the Olympics is that it provides role models, national role models, and, you know, you were making the point earlier that this is part of the national identity. You know, what are your thoughts about doping, match fixing, and gambling that goes on around the Olympics?
The real problem, as we saw in sports like professional cycling and other sports, of course, is that if you really want to compete with the elite athletes, you've got to go out there and dope. So the problem is not with the athletes. The problem is with the various sporting organisations and regrettably, with the Olympic movement itself. We've got the recent shocking news that the doping lab in Rio has been shut down. We know that at the London Olympic Games in 2012, there are all these athletes now that are going to be shamed as dopers. And what that means is that a lot of parents that are interested in their kids taking up professional sport will pull them away and ultimately will switch off and will stop watching sport altogether.
So there could be a danger that, you know, they sort of move from participation to spectator, and that whether it's doping or match fixing or gambling or live betting, whatever it is, could turn off the spectators as well.
It is. It's happening already. The doping is completely out of control, and it's other forms of corruption as well. At the Tour de France, we're going to be checking for, I don't know if you've heard this, motorized bikes.
People are motorizing their bikes?
Yes. So,
so now what are they going to do? Put the bikes through the X-ray machine? They're going to use the doping machine on the bikes?
It's insanity, really, and it's just moving more and more away from what sport was supposed to be about.
So if we're going to continue funding for the Olympics, and I'm a bit more skeptical, I think, than you are, in terms of the value, is there a way that the government or parents or civic organizations could be more engaged to help youth at that grassroots level, where you highlight that there's a disconnect between what's going on with Olympics and what's going on at grassroots?
The answer is a simple one, and it's this idea of, once again, reinstitutionalizing sport in the education system. And the idea is that you still have the pathways for elite athletes, you still specialize and you target certain sports, but you also got to encourage mass participation there. And if you focus on both of these, I think you'll be able to achieve a lot of outcomes.
Can I ask you, what's your favorite sport to watch?
Get ready for this one. All of them except for golf.
Ah.
I always take a few weeks off work and watch the Olympic Games.
You take time off work for the Olympics?
I love the Olympics and what they stand for.
Sport brings out a lot of different emotions, and it is a very complex thing, and I hope our listeners have enjoyed our picking it apart and putting it back together and getting ready to watch the Rio 2016 Olympics. Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud. You can find me on Twitter at Christopher Neff. Throughout the Olympics, be sure to visit our website, sydney.edu.au/news, for unique insights from the university's experts on the Games. Thanks for listening to Open for Discussion, a University of Sydney podcast.